Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 159, The Basics of Bread. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I am Roger, your host, and this of course is the podcast all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun. And today we're going to be continuing on our baking theme as we talk about bread. And to help me do that, I am welcoming to the show today Sander Comps, who is quite an active member of our Kitchen Counter Coffee Break Facebook group. He's been posting some really, really great baking pictures, specifically bread. And he is just embarking on a career change to become a professional baker. So we're going to get to Sander in a minute. But of course, before we do, you have to listen to my housekeeping spiel, right? First and foremost, show notes for this episode. And there's going to be actually quite a few links in the show notes today because Sander and I go over quite a few different things, a lot of it being social media and folks in the bread baking world that have some great tips and things to check out. So you're going to want to go over to the show notes, which will be at kitchencounterpodcast.com/159. kitchencounterpodcast.com/159 to get the show notes. Also in those show notes, we're going to talk about it in the conversation in a moment, but Sander shared with me a really simple recipe for bread that can be used to make loaves of bread or rolls or hamburger buns or pizza dough, all sorts of things. He wrote up his formula for that, his recipe for that, and he sent it over to me. So I put that in the show notes as well. And I have to say, last weekend, I slow smoked a pork butt, made a pulled pork. And to go with the pulled pork, I used Sander's recipe to make the hamburger buns. And they turned out great, which for me is saying a lot because I've said it many times on the show, I'm not really a baker, but I followed his instructions to the T and they turned out perfect. So if you're interested into getting into baking bread, if you do nothing else, definitely go to kitchencounterpodcast.com/159 and grab that formula for the bread. Also, if you're interested and you haven't already done so and you'd like to check out the Kitchen Counter Coffee Break Facebook group, just head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. That link will take you to the Facebook page where you can request to join. It's a private group, so there's no spam or anything weird like that going on. Just a cool group of people. And actually, Sander's in there too. And if you have questions about bread, there's a lot of accomplished bakers in that group. So you could ask probably any of them questions and get really good answers. But Sander said that if anyone has questions, they can go to the group, ask him, and he's happy to help however he can. So that's pretty cool. So you know what? Let's just skip the rest of the housekeeping stuff and get right into this conversation. Sander is going to talk a little bit more about himself, but just so you know, he lives in Belgium. I live in Oregon, USA. So we were doing this obviously online, but he has great audio. It sounds like he's right next door. Sander's been baking at home for about a year, really getting into the bread scene. In fact, he's a music teacher. He works with adults with autism, but he has recently decided to make a career change and get into baking professionally, commercially. So that is pretty exciting. Sander wanted to come on and offer some tips and just chat like we do so often on the Kitchen Counter here about making bread. And he just loves it when people are happy with the things he makes for them, when they love the food he cooks for them, and when folks can get some good information out of some knowledge he can share. So I think you're going to find this conversation very interesting. So have a listen. Stop over to the Facebook group. Say hi to Sander. Hi to the rest of us. Check out Sander's Instagram, instagram.com/SanderComps, and I will put that in the show notes as well. But without further ado, here we are to talk about the basics of bread. Hi, Sander. How are you?
Hey, Roger. I'm doing well. And you?
Great. Thanks so much for coming on the show. I'm glad you suggested this. You reached out to me on Facebook from the group, and this is going to be a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. It's evening here. I guess it's morning where you are now.
It is 10:30. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. It's 7:20. Yeah. It's 7:20 here. So
you better explain to people why that's the case.
Because I live in Belgium, and it's actually in the evening, and I think it's a 9-hour difference.
Yeah. I think so. Yep.
Yeah. So we're 9 hours in front.
Yeah, yeah, you're ahead. You're time. I'm time traveling right now. I'm visiting you in the future. So, Sander, you are an amazing baker, and I know this because you often share pictures. And since this whole coronavirus thing has started, you've been sharing more and more pictures of bread in particular that you've been baking. You've been sharing that in the Facebook group. So we connected and thought it might be fun for you to come on and talk about bread baking.
Yeah, of course, because it's something that a lot of people do right now, and it's also something that will be a bigger part in my life in a few weeks. So, yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about that first, because when we were messaging back and forth, as I understand it in our conversation just earlier, you're a musician and you do things like music education and lessons, but you're making a transition in your life. So why don't you talk about that, but in doing so, also just give us a little bit of background and how you came to baking in general and whatever you want to share.
Yeah, of course. So I've been interested in baking for, I think, a little over more than a year. And it all started with just the girlfriend from my brother. She's from Germany, actually, and she made Flammkuchen. It's sort of a French-German pizza-style dish. It's like a pizza, but really thin. And she made it, and it was my first recipe I saw with just mixing flour and water or a liquid and a little bit of yeast and salt. And it was quite interesting to see how flour and water made dough. I can't explain it, but it caught my attention. And it may be in my nature, but when I'm interested in something, I really want to know how it works, why it works like that. And also then if I make a mistake, I know what I did wrong and I can do it better next time. So I really want to know how things work. And from there, I just started baking. I was still living at home at that point. But I started baking bread for my family, some friends. Yeah, and from one thing led to another, and I'm baking really often, lots of different small bread, big breads, sourdough also became really interesting. And I'm working currently for more than 6 years with people, so like adults with autism. And now in 1 week, I'm actually becoming a baker. So it's been really fun to think that I'm going to leave one job behind and becoming a baker, because I'm so interested and so obsessed with bread and everything last days and last weeks, last year. So,
yeah, that's excellent. I think that's a very exciting and good for you for embracing something you love and making a career change. I think that's pretty amazing. I think a lot of people have hopes and dreams like that. Some people are lucky enough to live them out. So good for you.
It's been quite crazy because it was a job opening for a baker, not at night. So it's actually from 7 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. But they were looking for somebody who could, they're actually really good at pastry there. They have really nice pastries and cakes and pies and everything. And they're really well known for it. And they wanted to invest more on their bread side of the bakery. So they were looking for someone who likes food, who likes cooking, who likes baking. And they said up front, you don't have to have any experience, but it's nice if you know. But we're just looking for somebody who wants to go for it and who wants to learn and who's quite enthusiastic and just wants to bake bread and think about it.
And imagine what you have accomplished just in your home kitchen as a baker.
Yeah.
Imagine how turbocharged your skills are going to become in a commercial kitchen with all their equipment and the expertise that probably the folks on staff have as well. It's going to be pretty exciting for you, I bet.
Yeah, I've been there a few times now already, and we've also been to a factory where they get their flour and stuff from. But it's really nice to have a really large deck oven. So it's just crazy, and I'm really looking forward to it actually.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. So let's turn our attention then to talking about bread.
Yep.
And admittedly, I think I've said on the show before, I'm really not a baker. I'm not really. This is funny. As a quick aside, you mentioned that the shop you're going to work for is great at pastry and not so much bread. Just a few days ago, and this will be an episode that'll be coming out in the coming days as well, I spoke to a pastry chef about you know, fun things to do or ways you can make sweet treats while you're stuck at home in lockdown. So this is kind of cool because it's the other side of the coin. But I also told her, I have this mental thing, and maybe it is just a mental thing, and I just need to learn how to get over it, where I feel like I'm a pretty good cook, but when it comes to baking, that's a whole nother thing. I just, I almost have a preconceived notion that I'm just not a good baker. So therefore, when I do things, most of the time, I feel they don't turn out quite like I want them to. And I haven't quite figured out how to get past that. I don't know if you ever had that. It didn't sound like maybe you, you've come from that angle, but do you have any thoughts on that?
I've never been so much into like the sweet baking, or I tried baking cookies like a few years ago, but they turn out too dry or are never sweet enough or good enough. But the last couple of years, I'm also eating healthy. I'm trying to exercise a lot and just maintaining my health. So baking bread is something that I choose more regularly than like sweet cookies or whatever. So that's where that started.
So let's tackle this from the angle of somebody who maybe isn't very experienced when it comes to making bread, because I think that bears out in this current climate, right? Where people are stuck at home and they're doing more baking, and in some cases, maybe it's the first time they've ever attempted bread. Mm-hmm. If you could give just some simple advice to people as they get into making bread, some tips to be successful or more successful right at the start, what would you tell them?
Actually, there are a lot of things that that I could tell them. You can bake bread and you can succeed very easily, but first, when you want to learn to bake bread, I guess it's really really a good idea to pick out one recipe and to make it as often as you can, just to understand what you're doing and what is actually baking bread, because there are a lot of factors what play, like the temperature of the dough, it's the consistency of the flour, even the yeast. Because I know in America there and I see a lot of recipes anywhere to use not active dry yeast, but you have to let it proof first in the water with a little bit of sugar and then add it to your flour. But where in Belgium, we mostly use just like the instant yeast, which you can just add to the flour and then, just make the bread rise. You don't have to proof it up front. And that's something, I can imagine if you have yeast that you have to proof and it's really unstable, that you could have some bad luck with that. So you're going to make a bread and your yeast was dead, actually. So, it won't rise anymore. Mm-hmm. But also like a measuring scale, so a kitchen scale, is really a good idea. I've tried making bread with cups and measurements, but sometimes the cup's really packed with flour and sometimes it's not. And in baking, actually, it's quite important that you have the right measurements and the right grams or the right amounts, because when you have too much water, your bread will be really soft, really sticky, and you will not be able to shape it or knead it with hand, because I do everything with hands. I don't use a kitchen mixer. No. But I have I don't, because I don't have one.
Okay.
Well, and when you learn about it's a term, it's called autolyse, so it's letting the dough rest without salt before without yeast, just the flour in the water, combining it, letting it rest, it activates some enzymes in the flour and it makes actually it starts to develop the gluten. So you don't have to knead as long as you would have normally done because it already started the kneading for you, actually. So it's a lot of those things, those tips and tricks that work. But I'm gonna send you a basic bread dough formula, like a sheet of it I made in grams and in volumetric measurements, so cups and teaspoons. And it's just actually a basic recipe. So it's in grams, like 500 grams flour, 300 grams of water, 7 grams instant yeast, 7 grams salt. So that's like a really basic formula. But actually, you can make so much with that. It starts out in the method I explained, mix in a large bowl, knead, let it rest. But then when you actually are ready to shape the bread, you can actually choose, because this is a dough. You can also make pizza or focaccia or small bread rolls, or you can make actually whatever you like. like hamburger buns, or it's just all the same. If you know how it works, you can just divide it in portions. So if this dough makes one bread, it could also make, for example, like 8 buns or 2 focaccias or 3 baguettes. But okay. It's just knowing how to shape them, how much ground that they are, how you have to bake them, because a pizza, you're going to bake it at the highest temperature that your oven can get. But a bread, it's more like 220 Celsius or 460 Fahrenheit. So it's all different, but you can, with one dough, with one bread dough, one basic dough, you can bake so many different things. Yeah, it's just like I'm talking here. So if you have a kitchen scale, it's 500 grams white flour and then 300 grams. So that's another thing. In baking, you work with percentages. So your flour is always 100%. And a lot of people who bake bread, they don't know that, because that's something for like the people who want to do with the sourdough and a professional bakery to do the same. It's for scaling. So if I have a bread and it's a recipe, so this recipe is 160, 1.4, 1.4. So it's 100% flour, 60% water, 1.4% of yeast, and 1.4% of salt. So it's you can scale it up really nicely. So if you would have 1 kilogram of flour, it would be 1,000 grams of flour, 600 grams of water, 14 grams of salt, 14 grams of yeast. And if I have double, so you just double it. And it's really, really nice to scale. And that's the way they actually, all the bakers do it, with percentage.
That's awesome. And thank you for sharing that. And I'll put that out on the show notes. And you mentioned a couple of things I want to just touch on real quick before we get into more specific bread stuff. But two things, you made a very good point. One is whether it's this recipe you're going to share or whatever recipe it is, make it more than once, make it as often as you can. And that's something I advise people too when they're cooking. You can't just make a recipe once and move on if you're trying to learn and master things, because A, you don't know if it turned out the way it should have turned out. And only by making it several times do you start to get a sense for what's happening. But, you know, going deep into something instead of just trying, you know, 12 different bread recipes, for example, just pick one or two and just make it a lot. And then once you get that down, it's much easier to branch out. So I think that's a really good advice.
Yeah, you will learn if you do like 10 or 12 or how many recipes. But if you just stick to one recipe, it will probably come out different at first every time, or maybe not. It could also be. But you really start to know what you're doing, and you're getting used to. You're getting used to mixing the flour, kneading the dough, feeling how the dough actually feels. Because when you buy all-purpose flour from the local grocery store or you go to a mill, it's so much different. Or you buy flour with low gluten percentage or high gluten. There are really a lot of different aspects what can make bread difficult. But if you know what you're doing and you just stick to one recipe and you learn, then it will be quite easy.
Yeah.
Because you understand what you're doing. But I guess it's like, yeah, like you said, it's with cooking. It's with everything. It's like that.
Yeah. I've used the analogy even before of I think you playing a musical instrument, right? So I fiddle around on guitar. I think you said you teach guitar. It would be the equivalent of like trying to learn 12 different songs on guitar, but only playing them once each rather than picking one song and playing it many times. You know, it's right. You're not going to really master it until you play it a lot, or until you bake that bread a lot, or make that dish a lot.
Yeah, you just get a feel for it. And it may be in my nature to just do, I really want to understand. I want to understand that when the dough has more whole wheat, so it's more whole wheat flour, then it just, whole wheat is more thirsty. So you have to add more water just to get the same consistency of the dough. And it's all those little things. Or spelt flour, it has a really strange reaction of the gluten. So it will be more elastic. There's so many things that can go wrong. But if you just stick to one recipe, white flour, just play it safe. Get to know what you're doing, and then you can experiment that. It's pretty nice to experiment with.
Yes, and then the other thing you said, which I think just bears repeating, and it's an important concept as well, is you mentioned you do this by hand because you don't have a stand mixer. And I think sometimes, whether it's baking, certainly, or even cooking, people sometimes substitute the practice and the repetition and the skill building for getting the equipment that they think is going to make them successful. Mm-hmm. Right. So you can make amazing bread as evidenced by your, what you share in our Facebook group with very simple tools, right? You kitchen scale notwithstanding. That's pretty sophisticated. But even then, they're not expensive and they're readily available, but you're not relying on a bread machine or a mixer or anything powered. It sounds like, is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that's a fair statement. And even if I had to, it would have been quite difficult because we're living in a really small house here at the moment because we're going to build our real house, I guess. And now we're just living in a tiny house on our ground. But like I said, I really want to know how things work. And for the same for me, if I want to make a bread that has really, really wet, so really a lot of water in it, you actually can't mix it with a mixture because it will just turn it into shreds and it won't work. But also the thing, when you need it in a mixer, you just don't feel what the mixing and the kneading does to the dough. You can't feel what it will do because you can also over mix and then your dough is, you can turn it out or throw it away because it will be, the gluten will be overdeveloped, it will be really sticky. And it's really easy with a machine because the machine, like the mixture, it also adds heat. It because the friction of the dough and the dough hook, it adds heat. And when the dough temperature gets too hot, it's over your dough. So that's also not, and then the kneading will be too fast or too slow, or some people say knead on first speed for 2 minutes, then on 10 minutes on second speed. It was just so complicated and I was just, I also didn't have a mixture, but.
And imprecise, right? Like first speed on one mixer is probably different than a different mixer,
right?
Like you would never. And I didn't even consider the fact that the mixing adds friction and which creates heat. And even though it's probably imperceptible to you or I, you said baking is so precise, even those slight changes can really impact the final product. That's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if the dough temperature also really, especially with sourdough, it's really important. I don't know how it's in Fahrenheit, but I guess it's if the dough is 2 or 3 degrees Celsius, but if it's just a little colder, then the proofing time for the bread could be double or half. So it could really make an impact because that could influence the strength of the yeast when you want to bake your bread and then it stays flat. You're like, oh, what did I do wrong? But you used cold water in the winter because you have to use a little more warmer water in the winter and a little more cold water in the summer. But if you just use room temperature water from in your house, then you're actually always safe.
Okay, interesting.
Quite safe, actually, especially in the winter. But you just have to keep an eye on. I also put that in my basic bread dough recipe. You really have to feel and to look at the dough because the time measurements, that like I said, they can be really inaccurate because if the dough is too hot, 60 minutes will be too long. And the recipe said 60 minutes, but your dough was actually the dough temperature was too hot. So it was like maybe already there at 40 minutes and that's overproofed. So it's a lot of things that can go wrong. And then if you want to know what went wrong, then those things can explain a lot, actually.
What else about yeast is worth mentioning? Is there any, I mean, you mentioned there's some differences, right? There's the instant yeast, there's active dry yeast.
Yeah, I guess you really have to know what yeast you're buying and dealing with, because if you have active dry yeast, I've never worked with it, but I can imagine if you have active dry yeast and you're just thinking, oh, this recipe says add your dry yeast or add your yeast to the flour and not proof it up front in the water. Yeah, your bread probably won't rise, huh?
Right. Yeah.
I've never tried that, but probably won't, because what would be the point of letting it proof first in the water to see if it's still alive? But I know that the active dry yeast, it's the flakes of yeast, so the kernels of yeast are bigger, slower than the instant yeast. Mm-hmm. And the instant yeast is smaller, so that way it can dissolve easier in the water, so in the bread, and that way it rises faster.
Okay.
I know that there's that difference, but yeah, most of the time when I see a recipe that's from the USA or with active dry yeast, you can leave that step out if you know what yeast you are using. If you're using the instant yeast or the fresh yeast, like the cake yeast, it's different because you can just crumble it up and just put it directly into the flour. And because it's one step less, I always, but here it's in Belgium, it's common to use the instant yeast. It's the only thing we know, instant yeast or fresh yeast. We don't know the active dry yeast. So everybody who wants to bake bread here and is asking me for some questions, I say, you just use the dry yeast and you just put it in the flour, water, and a little bit of salt, and you're good to go. And but there is a big difference, and that difference could really make your bread actually, because if you use the wrong type of yeast, yeah, it won't rise, and then you won't have a really good outcome, I guess.
I want to talk about sourdough in a second too, but another thought just occurred to me, and we're kind of leaving out one pretty big bread category, I guess, and that would be the unleavened breads.
Yeah, the flatbreads.
Yeah,
so
flatbreads.
Like the tortillas and yeah, of course, and the roti and you have a lot of them actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any opinions or anything to say about? I mean, it's a big category. It's worth its own podcast series probably. But
yeah, of course. I really like them actually because when you like the magic from the flour and the water, it also is really. Really nice to have that magic when you don't have any yeast around. When I'm at my work and I forgot my bread or whatever, or my lunch package, I just take some flour and some water and make a tortilla or something and just put it in a pan, let it bake, and then just cook an egg. And it's really, really nice to have that because you have tortillas, you have, if you roll them thin enough, you can actually make a pita bread without yeast. But yeah, really, the pan has to be really hot, so the steam inside of the dough actually makes the pocket.
Right.
So it is possible, yeah. But
And so I guess one answer to the I can't get yeast question would be then maybe now is not the time to make yeast bread, and maybe you should get comfortable with flatbreads because there's two. You could get comfortable with flatbreads, and you could get comfortable with things like quick breads where you use chemical leavening, right?
Yeah.
Like baking soda.
Yeah. Baking soda, yeah.
So there's options, but you know, without yeast, I suppose, unless you're making a sourdough, you're somewhat limited on the kind of breads you can make.
Yeah, I think you also have the naan. So with mm-hmm. the yogurt, and but actually, I searched it on Google. You have, if you type in flatbread, you get lots of choices, a lot of of options. So
So that's that would be something to explore too. Don't forget about the flatbreads. They serve a purpose and are
and with whatever kind of flour you have on hand. That if you have a wholemeal flour or rye or spelt or you can just experiment and try. It's always nice to experiment with different kind of grains or flours or I think it was last week at my work. So we make like soft breads, so like we call them sandwich here, so you pronounce it like sandwich, mm-hmm. but it's actually just a soft roll, I think it's called, so like a dinner roll or soft squishy bread. And then I made it with instead of with milk, I made it with chocolate milk.
Ooh.
And then with chocolate, little chocolate pieces. So it actually was really sweet and really, really savory. It was really good, and they liked it. But you can just experiment. There's nobody who will say, "Oh, you can't do that." If you want to make I've made a pumpkin pizza. So instead of the water, I just we had pumpkins in the garden, and I sliced them up. I cooked them until they were kind of a puree, and I just weighed it on the scale. So how many grams? If I have like 100 grams of flour, I would have 70 grams of pumpkin puree. I just kneaded it, and I felt that the dough, is it soft enough? Is it too hard? Is it too stiff to dry? And I just added more pumpkin, and it was like a very orangey dough. And then I baked, spread it out like a pizza. I topped it with lots of things. I baked it, and the orange color was still there, but it disappeared while baking. And it's the same with the beetroot, I guess, is rote beet here, but it's a really pinkish red color. And when you bake the bread, it's just gone.
That's interesting.
It's the color is just gone. So experiment. And I think, right, especially now, just have fun. And why not?
And you know what else I would say? And this just came to me, and I haven't, excuse me, I haven't had this for a long time, but My mom, so my mom's background, you might have heard me talk about it before, is from an ethnic group called Germans from Russia. So they're Germans, but they've lived in Russia for 100 years or whatever, right? So they've kind of kept their German food ways, but have adapted them. Anyway, she would make something, and I can't think of the proper name for them, but we would call them doughboys. And they would simply be, they were very simple. I think all they were flour, maybe some shortening, salt, milk, and I think maybe baking powder, but they were fry bread basically. So you would make these little discs with your hand, and then you would put them in some hot oil. You know, that would be shortening or oil or whatever. And then they would kind of puff up and be crispy, and we would smear jam on them or, you know, whatever. That's so good. So that's another
because if you fry dough, it's but it's with baking soda, Nana. Because it, the ingredients do sound a lot like donuts.
Yeah,
actually,
yeah, exactly.
Because you also,
they are kind of like
you also fry them,
Yeah, exactly. And they puff up and and I suppose the liquid what causes the puffing besides the baking soda or the baking powder would be the moisture too, right? So is the steam. Because as soon as it hits that hot oil, right, it's probably steaming inside and puffing them up as well. Anyway, that's another non-yeast idea, I guess.
A lot of things to try.
Let's can we talk about sourdough for a few minutes?
Yeah, of course.
Sourdough seems to be – a lot of people breaking bread right now, but sourdough seems to be the king for whatever reason. I'm on Twitter just kind of lurking, and everybody's talking about sourdough starters and and making sourdough bread, probably because you can make it without yeast, right? You can get your own starter going. Do you have any thoughts on sourdough?
Yeah, I learned about sourdough. I think the way everybody does you hear about tartine and the perfect loaf from Maurizio and on Instagram it's all over.
We had Maurizio on the show a while back. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard. I also talk to him sometimes on Instagram. He's a really great guy.
Yeah, he is.
But it's very interesting. Yeah, you see the bread with the big holes, and then the bigger the better, and then it becomes smaller again. But it's really a trend, I guess. Sourdough and just baking bread. But I've made my starter from a lot of different articles I saw online, but mostly when I when some people ask me from how do I make my starter, I just got into Maurizio's website, do the perfect loaf, and then because that's such a really good explanation, and when you have a starter, you actually know what you're doing, and you can just make your own again or whatever. But I have a whole wheat rice starter. It's called called Roger, so it's called Roger, but then in Flemish. But it's everything that people talk about and more, I guess, because it can be predictable, it can be unreliable, it can be a mind of its own, it can die on you if you don't feed. Mine's in the fridge because I still work full time now at my other job, and I probably will take it to the bakery, I guess. I hope. But it has quite a steep learning curve because you have to feed it, you have to maintain it, you have to maybe you have to try it, you have to smell it, you have to taste it. In Belgium, there's a company, it's called Piratos, and they actually have the quest for sourdough. So they have I don't know if you heard about it, but they have a library in Belgium where 100, I think more than 180 different sourdoughs from all around the world, and they're stored there in refrigerators, and people can look and see where they came from, and they feed them one time in like 2 or 3 months. And it's just a library from sourdoughs all around the world. It's really interesting.
That is very cool.
Yeah, it's called Karel de Smet, and it's the sourdough librarian, and he's also on Instagram and all the things, and it's really nice just to see. So it's actually really, really trendy, really, really popular, yeah. And it was actually how we made breads, or how they made breads, all the time,
yeah.
Until the yeast, the dry yeast, and the cake yeast came around. So it's like, oh yeah.
Well,
now for 200 years, but
well, send me that link to the yeast, or excuse me, to the sourdough library, because I want to check it out.
Of course.
And I'll put it in show notes. It sounds very, very cool.
It's brilliant. It's really nice. It's really cool.
And that's what's cool about sourdough starters, right? Is some folks are so passionate about them. And not even individuals. I mean, there's starters that have been around forever, right? I can't think of the think of the bread company in San Francisco's the name of it, but it's a famous sourdough bakery in the United States, and I think they've used the same starter for 150 years or something.
Yeah, it's amazing how, it's alive. Eh? Yeah. You see it grow. You see it shrink. It's really interesting just to to get your head around and see how it works.
Yeah, there's another account I follow on Twitter, and I don't know if you know this guy. His name is Seamus Blackley. I think he was one of the inventors of the Xbox video game console. But
oh, really?
Yeah. Now what he does is he researches ancient baking techniques, and he's like on the quest to recreate ancient Egyptian bread.
Oh, no.
Yeah, wow. Using their techniques, using somehow he's getting starters from Egypt. It's fascinating. You have to go check out his Twitter account.
Yeah, of course, I will.
Yeah, it's at Seamus Blackley. I'll put the links in the show notes. But he's always posting sourdough and his experiments, and it's pretty wild. Several months ago, I'd have to go back and find it. I don't have it memorized. But he talked about this starter or this culture or something that he got that was thousands of years old.
Or
they reconstituted it, right? It wasn't alive the whole time, but they found the source of it and were able to. It's pretty amazing
to revive it. Yeah, but it is quite amazing. It's pretty cool to see how that works and how you can just leaven a bread with something that's alive and then it's been around for so many years because that's what it is. It's really old. Actually, it's a really old technique, and yeah. It's really interesting.
It was probably an accidental technique, right? So many things in cooking and baking are probably discovered somewhat accidentally. You know, somebody fermented something because you can do it right out of the air, right? I mean, there's cultures in the air and it happens and a happy accident and the result was great. And they're like, we can figure out how to replicate that, right?
Yeah, because before that was all flatbreads and all just like that.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing. You mentioned a couple of things like the Maurizio's website, the Perfect Loaf. You mentioned the sourdough library, which is interesting. Do you have any other favorite bread resources that you want to share? I caught you off guard on this one.
There are a lot of people I actually follow on Instagram. It's perfect for this. You have the Trevor J. Wilson. He's been a professional baker, but now he's just at home, and he only bakes on his Instagram sourdough. But he has an ebook online. It's called Open Crumb Mastery. So for everybody who wants to learn how to make that open crumb that's so popular right now, his ebook is just it's like 200-300 pages. He's just made a new second edition, so a second version of it. I think he edited a few things, but the book is so. If you want to know why it has that open crumb, or what happened, or what you did good, or what you did wrong, he's the most famous or the best resource you can get, I guess.
Okay.
And then you have Carl Desmet is actually really the sourdough librarian. Mm-hmm. You have them, so he's the librarian, and then you have Girl Meets Rye. She's she has really really dark baked breads, and she's. I don't know from where she is, but yeah, she's also followed by Maurizio and the sourdough librarian. So there's also a guy in England. He's called Jack Sturgis, and he has on YouTube. He has a Bake with Jack.
Okay.
So he's I don't think he's a professional baker. He's just a home baker, but he gives lessons and classes, and he also has really nice videos. He every week he uploads a video. And he just explains something. So how do you know how much dough to put in your bread tin? Or my bread didn't rise. What did I do wrong? Or he's actually really really informative. And really, I also learned a lot from him. And then you have like, Campbell 2664. He's a guy who made the dough knife that doesn't stick. So the Campbell dough knife. There are a lot of great people on social media. They just do great things.
Okay. Well, I'll get those that information and put them in the show notes as well because it.
Yeah, I'll send it in mail.
Well, I it kind of brings up the question then to me for you, Sander, is do you have a blog? Are you planning on starting something, or do you have Instagram, or is there a Sander Comp YouTube channel in the works here?
No, actually, with building the house, it's quite busy, but I do have a dream with my baking. I really would like to start giving classes when the house is ready. So we have a quite a big basement with a really nice window in the basement, actually. So there's a hole next to the house. You can see, that was one thing I really needed to bring daylight into the basement. So it could be, a room where I could work from home,
like a teaching kitchen, almost.
Something like that. And my dream is to maybe in 10 years or less, I don't know, to combine what I do now. So I work with people with autism. I give them creative things to do. I give them I bake bread with them. And actually, my idea is to start a little bakery. But in my own, it's like in like 10 years or in the future, but that would be my dream to do with bread and, just to have a small bakery with four or five or six people with autism or a disability and just to, make them feel, good about themselves, to teach them, to bake bread, to make it worth their while and just give them something to do. And just for one time or for those days, just forget that they are who they are and just feel like they're just normal people who can do really good and do really good things and bake bread and make people happy.
All right, Sander. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, talking bread. I hope you had a good time and I hope maybe we can do something again in the future because I think this has had been a really good conversation.
Yeah, of course. It's been so fun. So when I started at the bakery, we can do it again. And then I'll maybe send some pictures or whatever, or some new bread recipes or of course you can. I'll keep you posted on the kitchen calendar coffee break and we'll talk to each other soon, I guess.
All right. Well, thank you, Sander.
Bye-bye.
Hey, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Sander Comps talking about the basics of bread. As you can see, he's very passionate about it. He has a lot of good knowledge to share. And, you know, he's just starting out on this new journey of becoming a professional baker. So I wish him the best of luck with that. And I'm sure he'll come back to the show at some point and share some new things he's learned. By the way, I mentioned before, but if you head over to thekitchencounterpodcast.com/159, you can get to the show notes with that recipe for bread that Sander shared, his social media, and all of those other interesting folks and resources we mentioned. I'll put links for all of those over in the show notes. So, Sander, thanks once again for coming on the show. Really, really enjoyed it. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for one more episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. You know, I say this every time, but I mean it every time I say it. I thank you so, so much for taking the time out of your day to stop, listen to the show, to be part of our community. It absolutely means the world to me, and I love each and every one of you guys. So thank you so much. If you think your family or friends might get something out of the show and you think they'd want to be part of our growing little community here, by all means, please share with them, show them how to listen to podcasts, that sort of a thing. All right, everybody, thanks again. Until next time, I am Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking and baking.